The Corian Football Club podcast is kindly sponsored by the Lodge Hotel, famous for food, functions, and fantastic value.
Hi, welcome along once again to the official Corian FC podcast with myself, Damian Mullen, and my regular co-host, Jonathan McNabb. We will speak to Johnny in a moment, but first of all, some housekeeping and a big thank you once again to our very kind podcast sponsors, Corian's Lodge Hotel. Check out all their deals and a particular one this week. Some of you may be interested, a super family two-night stay which won't break the bank. All the details are on the hotel's website, so worth checking out as well coming into the summer season. So I mentioned at the start my regular co-host Johnny McNabb. Johnny, I'm glad to see you're back in one piece, reasonably healthy looking. You were away at the weekend and away in Paris, I believe, but it wasn't just all sightseeing, was it?
No, I was away doing the marathon, so my first marathon, so I wanted to do it under 4 hours, but just wasn't quite that time. But no, a good experience. It was madness and how people are supporting you and the stops and just everything. So funny story for all the listeners. So this is true, Bill. So I finished, got up and got my t-shirt and my legs just gave way, KO'd, and was absolutely passed out and woke up 2 minutes later, was in a wheelchair with a Red Cross. And they're in the tent, so I had to get my temperature taken and everyone else. So, I couldn't have done anything more. So, big shout out to the Red Cross in Paris for helping me. But no, good experience, and sort of wet up my appetite. Didn't really do one more.
I wondered any photographs of this.
No, thankfully not. I'm the ugliest runner you've ever seen. So I've just looked through my marathon photos there, and there's not one I'm going to buy. So. Thankfully, it was me in the Red Cross tonight. Either, but it's madness when you finish. There's so many people being sick and people not being able to walk and people KO and stuff. It's madness what people put themselves through. So, that was just mental when it finished. I just had not. I couldn't stand up. Couldn't feel my legs. So I think they were just in a state of shock. Big shout out to them.
Yeah, well, here, all joking aside, congratulations. I don't think I'll ever attempt, let alone finish a marathon. So all joking aside, well done. Big achievement for you and Greg Calvin, I think, as well. Give a shout out to Greg who did it alongside you, didn't he? Big Corian fan.
Yeah, he did. He was, me and him were going well. We were on target about 20 mile in, but you go in like these tunnels in France, and going down the hill seemed all right, but when he kept on going up the hills, it was just the hamstrings and everything were going. So he finished, I think, 2 or 3 minutes quicker than me. So he's the bragging rights. So fair play to him. And I just had to let him go. I was down to nearly 7 minutes a kilometre towards the end. I might as well have walked it. It would have been quicker walking, never mind trying to jog. So I had nothing left to give, but no, it was a good experience and good to get it done.
Very good, very good. Trebien, as they say in Paris. Listen, we've got a very special guest on the show this week. I don't know if he's ever run a marathon or not, but we'll maybe ask him now. Corian striker Matthew Shevlin, welcome first of all to the podcast. And marathon, is that something ever would be of interest to you?
Hey lads, thanks for having me on. No, I can't say I've ever run a marathon before, but definitely something that'd be interesting in the future.
Well, you say you've never ran a marathon, and that's fine, but just when you said that, do you have the wee tracking things at the club? I mean, do you get your stats back? It's just how far would you run on average in a game, for example?
Average game would probably be 11.5K. The likes of Lynchy probably run 13, though. He's a freak.
Would he be the most, would he?
Yeah, him and Glax would be the most, up near 13.
13K. See, I mean, Johnny, like 13K, that's a heck of a lot, isn't it? Like, you're talking 26 miles from marathon. Chevy said he wouldn't do a marathon, but yeah, he's banging out 11, 12K per game.
Yeah, 90 minutes and some intensity as well, and different turns and looking for the ball and concentrating and looking around, seeing where everybody else is. So yeah, it's a lot of distance. I think Leroy Miller was the same. I think Lauren do maybe a wee bit of stats as well and how much their players run, and he is an athlete, to be fair, when you look at him. So I know Lee Lynch's stats. I think Orne something on one night, and they were. It was literally like, I think it was nearly 3 or 4k more than the next player. I think it was maybe the Ballymena League Cup game or something. It was one of the.
And he spends half the time on the bench too.
It's just the energy that he gives you and his running and stuff. It's absolutely mental, to be fair to him. So he's like a Duracell battery, I suppose. But no, it's, I suppose when you're playing midfielder, that's probably your. Glax will probably be the same. He would cover a lot of ground too. So. Them strikers, they mustn't seem to move too much. So, but that's
move. Oh, that's us.
I daren't even ask you, Chevy, who's got the lowest figures, but maybe we won't go there.
Definitely Coley. That man doesn't.
Just land him straight out of there, why don't you? But sure, he'd be all right for that. Listen, great to have you on, Matthew. Been a probably a strange old season for you, hasn't it? I mean, we all know last year was a fantastic year for you. You finished top goal scorer across the whole of the Irish League, not only Coleraine. You would have probably gone into this season looking to build on the success of last year. But it hasn't really happened that way, and it's through no fault of your own. A couple of really bad injuries, and it's been a really stop-start season. I mean, I'm just wondering how frustrating has that been, given how well last year went, to have to deal with that this year?
Yeah, it's been real frustrating. Last season, obviously, couldn't have went any better for myself, finishing with a golden boot. But started the season really well with 2 goals against Ballymena and thought, this is going to go well again. And then I got an injury in that game, put me out for a bit. And then ever since, until the last sort of month or two, it's just sort of been injury or suspension to another injury. It's just been inconsistent for me. So I'm glad to be back playing every week now, and hopefully I can finish the season strong.
I mean, how frustrating is it? I mean, we're recording this on the same day as Stuart Dallas, Northern Ireland and Leeds, has announced that he's retiring from football, and he's been trying to get over an injury for 2 years out of the game. And I've been reading some of the thing where he said it's been frustrating and etc. You haven't been out as long, but how difficult is it when you're going to maybe training and you're watching the guys going out and you can't take part in it? That must be tough.
Yeah, it's definitely tough. Like, for example, I was only out for 12 weeks. And although for me, that felt like forever, there's other guys that have been out for ages. Like Rodney's been out for a year now, and he's only back into full training the sort of last few weeks. So it just goes to show that there's definitely worse out there. But yeah, 12 weeks for me felt like ages.
And it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, it's like it's not that people probably do it on purpose or anything, but if you have a long-term injury, you maybe tend slightly get forgotten about, if you know what I mean. Like, as you say, Robbie's been out for like a year almost, and a lot of people, supporters, whatever, through no fault of their own, maybe Rodney goes out of their thinking somewhat, and that's just because he's not about in the game, and that could be hard to deal with, I would have thought.
Yeah, definitely. And to be fair to Rodney, he had a bad injury, but he kept amongst the group and kept chatting to the lads, and he's now back training as good as ever. So it just goes to show that if you put the hard work in, you'll get your rewards.
I mean, John, it's one of those things. As a footballer, you're going to get injuries, et cetera, et cetera. But what Matthew's saying, it's like that support network and trying to accommodate the people who are injured and trying to keep them involved in the group as much as possible is hugely important.
It is, and I don't want to make his head any bigger, but Matthew's loss was probably felt more than anybody else, because he's a big part of our goals, if you know what I mean. He scores the majority of them. I can see him smirking there as well. So I better get the compliments in now before I start slabbering. But no, it's especially off the back of the season that he had, he probably wanted to go in and even better, you know, what he'd done last year. And it's just been one of them things. And you just knew as soon as he came back, you know, the red card came out. Obviously, it was a harsh one. And it just seemed like one wee setback after another. And it's just been probably stop-start. But Orne makes a good point. It's been like that for a lot of boys. Josh Carson, Stephen Lowry, Stephen O'Donnell, the real spine of our team. So you take a spine out of a team of, he's take a spine out of any team, they're going to really sort of struggle to be inconsistent. So fingers crossed that we've got all the boys now back at the right time and have a strong end to the season. And you make a good point about the group, and Obviously, it's been a tough one for Rodney, been a tough one for Adam Mullen and those guys, you know, and they still get their in and around it and still in with the boys and still feel a part of it, even though they're probably not out there on the pitch.
Does it make you stronger, Matthew, as a person and as a footballer, if you're out injured and you have to put the effort, the work in to get back into the team and the squad? Does that ultimately and long term make you a better player and a better person?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people say they come back better and stronger after an injury. For example, when I was younger and I got injured, it would have impacted me more negatively than this past injury. Whereas this time I sort of had a positive outlook, thinking I can get 12 real good weeks of rehab and strength in here and I can come back stronger. So it just depends what way you look at it. But thankfully, I took my rehab well and I'm back playing well now, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, you said that about your 12 weeks, your rehab and stuff and coming back stronger. I mean, I think I seen a photograph the other day and you did look physically stronger. I mean, have you been sort of working on that strength conditioning side of yourself, because you did look to be stronger physically than you did previously?
Yeah, well, I've always sort of went to the gym anyway, like a couple of times a week, but I was working in Portrush during the time I was injured, so I was going straight from work to football and putting the work in the gym as well as my pitch sessions. So I've just sort of kept up that routine of gym and football at the same time, so I'll keep that going.
And you're back and you've had a reasonable run of games now as well, and thankfully for both you as an individual and for the team, you're back among the goals again, and Saturday was a case in point. Two goals on Saturday by all accounts.
Well, if you give me that second one, I'll take it. No, obviously I got the first one, but I don't know who was giving me that second one.
Johnny, it certainly wasn't you, Johnny, because you were in Paris, so it couldn't have been you. But I mean, I have to admit, I wasn't there either. And when I seen Chevy score twice, I thought, great. And then, of course, I watched the highlights later that evening, and I was like, going, where was Chevy here?
He put up on the big screen that it was my goal.
The BBC said it was Chevy, and then James Wilkinson, who was tweeting for us, he said it was Glax. And then I was confused, and then more people said Chevy than said Glax, and then I watched the footage back, and I was like, right, okay, I think it was only one person that I think it's an OG, the way to be perfect.
But you gave it as an OG in the end.
I think it's an OG. I asked Marshall Gillespie, because obviously we collaborate the stats together, and he gave us an OG. So it's an OG anyway. You can argue it's on target, but flip me, your man drops it into the net. So.
Yeah. I think that's harsh. I think you should give it the Glax benefit of the attack.
Chevy, I'm with you. I think that's harsh. The shot was
well. Don't blame me. Blame Marcel Gillespie. Don't blame. I'll speak to Glax about it and see if he cries about it. I'll give it to him.
that's Chevy in the Strikers Union.
This is another Aaron Jarvis, Conor McHenry situation that I don't need. It's just listen. It doesn't matter how they go in. A goal's a goal. And, yeah, it was good. Obviously, it was away and it was 2-0 down at halftime. I seen the manner of the two goals, two second balls from set pieces. Two soft goals, but I suppose they come back and against the team who knew that win would guarantee Europe. Was a good point for us and just keeps the momentum going. And fair play to Clifford. Obviously, they've now qualified after the Glens' draw. So, again, then all the other results, just obviously it's a big win for Balmain as well. Obviously, Newry losing late, so. Whenever you're away, it just seems mad, all the results and stuff, and hard to keep up with it. But no, good draw for Green in the end up, and Josh Carson laid on the plate for Chevy, and that was it.
Chevy likes scoring against the Reds as well. But we were talking before we came on air, Matthew, and you were saying performance wise, the first half wasn't good, but then you kind of changed things in the second half and up the game. And it was a big statement as well, because 2-0 down to Cliftonville at half-time, a lot of people would probably have just thought Cliftonville will go on and win that game. But for you guys to come back and to get a point, and maybe potentially you could have won it at the end. But that tells you something just about the current mindset around the place, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's been sort of the way it's went the last few weeks. We went down to the 10 men a few times and we just sort of dug in there and we were dogged and got a result. And Saturday again, we were 2-0 down, come back and got a result. So we kept an unbeaten run going now to six games, which earlier in the season you wouldn't have thought we would have got that.
You'd be looking to win six all season. But I mean, did Orn and the coaching team, did they say anything in particular at half time in a game like that to try to change things? Or is it more the onus is on the group of players to pull themselves out of it?
Yeah, the players ourselves knew we weren't playing well and what we needed to do, but Orange just sort of gave us the instructions of what we needed to do in the second half. We were being too passive in the first half and letting them come out with the ball too much from the back and not pressing them well. So we just went out in the second half and had a bit more hunger and pressed them high, and we got our joy.
And psychologically, it was a good result too, because Cliftonville have had the upper hand over Corian, I suppose, a bit this year as well. So for Corian to just lay down a bit of a marker, okay, but maybe not play Cliftonville again this season, but at least it shows that the gap or whatever, that the Cliftonville aren't holding the upper hand completely.
Yeah, sometimes when you're 2-0 down in a game like that, some people may see the game is dead and buried. So when you come back and you get a result from the game, sometimes it feels like a win. So we were happy to come back and get something from the game, and hopefully we can keep that momentum into the remaining split games heading into the playoffs.
Jamie, Matthew, how are you finding playing with Jamie McGonagall? Obviously, he's come in January, and how are you finding that?
Yeah, it's been great so far. Obviously, it's a completely new partnership, and we played one up top predominantly last season. So the team changed the formation, and the two of us playing together, it's been really good. I think we complement each other well, and we both have a bit of pace, and we can press defenders and get us high up the pitch, and the partnership's only going to get better.
We had your uncle on the show a couple of weeks ago, Wes Lamont. We had him on, and I don't know if you've listened back and thought we were chatting away, and he said he can be a wee bit sore on you when he's chatting to you. It gives you a bit of encouragement, maybe. Would you like to defend yourself?
If you get any encouragement from Wes, you know he's done really well. But no, he's been brilliant for me in my career. Obviously, he's been there for me from youth football right up to now. So I have a lot to be grateful for to him.
I can't say too much because I look about 49, never mind. But it seems like you've been around the league for a long time. Do you feel like that way too? Like you're only, what, 26, 27?
25.
Or 25. 25. But it feels like you've been, you have been around for nearly 10 years as well.
Just the 10 years in the Irish League at 25.
Yeah, I actually saw a throwback there on my Facebook the other day, and it was me coming on in my first Ballymena Corian Derby game, and I was obviously playing for Ballymena, and I was only 15, so that was a bit of a throwback.
Who was playing defence for Corian that day?
Big Ogilvy and Canning.
Oh,
I actually had 2 1-on-1s. I should have scored.
who was in nets for Corian?
I think it was a young boy. I can't mind his name.
Who would that be? Maybe Andy Finlay.
Finlay, aye, Andy Finlay.
Good call.
Who would have been at Ballymena Strike? I know Boise was there. There's Boise, I know Boise well. And Tippy, would Tipton have been there, or guys like that?
Tippy was maybe a season or two after that. When I first joined, it was Boise, and Big Jenkins would have played up top the whole time. Can't even mind who else was there.
Mm-hmm. Were you part of the League Cup one as well, were you? Or were you away at that stage? Or?
I was on loan at Ards when they won the League Cup.
And you had a couple of bad cup final defeats with them, didn't you? I think it was a couple of League Cup ones and Shield as well. I think you might have won the Shield as well from them.
I won the County Antrim Shield, beat Linfield at Windsor, and lost 2 County Antrim Shield finals and 2 League Cup finals.
Whenever you were growing up, obviously there was a lot of speculation about you. How did you find that? Because obviously you were probably still at school, and yet like Crystal Palace and stuff for it. Is there any? How do you feel about, is there any like resentment towards Bally for not letting you go, or how do you look at all that, or how do you?
Now that I'm 25 and I'm obviously a lot more mature about the whole thing, like the club needed to look after themselves, and they obviously thought they wanted a certain amount of money, but I do feel there was a bit of give and take. They could have let me go for whatever money they were offered, and they would have got maybe more in the long run. But look, time moves on, and my career's went well to now, and I'm happy in life. So I can just look back and think, things could have been different, but I'm fine with it now.
Whenever we have Korean players who came from Korea, we always ask them. So suppose a Ballina guy playing for Ballina, did you always find playing for your local team harder? Do you think the fans were harder than their local players, or how did you find playing at Ballina?
My time at Ballina, like, obviously when I broke into the team, I was a Ballina fan, like, loved it. I thought, this is amazing. And then started to get a few niggly injuries here and there, and David Jeffrey came in and the quality of player went up. So it was obviously harder to get into the team. I kind of probably forgot that I was only 16 and I was wanting to be in the team every week. And it was just very stop-start for me. So I can look back and my time at Ballymena positively, and I got my break in football there, but I can also look back and think, oh, I could have went well better for me.
And just following up what Johnny was saying, like, you know, you started with Ballymena at 15 and you scored with your first touch like 90 seconds after coming on in your first game. That was some impact.
Yeah, I'd only joined Ballymena under-19s that season, and was quickly fast-tracked to the first team after a few months, trained with them for a bit, and then was in a few squads, and then I was just thrown on one game. We were 2-0 up against Ballina Mallard, and thankfully come on and scored my first touch.
I mean, it doesn't get better. And Glenn Ferguson, I think, he was a manager at that time. I mean, as a young upcoming striker, to have somebody like him as your manager, it must have been pretty interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, he was great for me at the start. Obviously didn't have that long with him, but he loved everything that I was about. Just hunger to score goals and to run it behind the fences, and he really liked that. So I think that's why he gave me my chance.
And then obviously Ballymena, but and then I think you were in Ards on loan, and then Linfield, I think, is that, I mean, that was a big move for you, but how do you look back on that time as well? Because it was a big move, but maybe it just didn't work out possibly the way that you would have envisaged it, Matthew.
Yeah, well, first of all, I had the loan spell at Ards, and it went well for me. I was there and joined in the January and scored 6 or 7 goals for the end of the season. So I'd encourage any young striker or any young player to go out on loan and get game time if they need it. And then the move to Linfield came about, and at the time, it's hard to say no to the biggest club in the country. So I went there with obviously high hopes that it would go really well for myself and I could get in the team and stuff. But obviously Waterworth and Shane Lavery at the time was there. I was going to be tough for me, but I look back at my time in Linfield as really positively. Like, I was training with real high quality players. I had a real good manager in Healy, and developed a real winning mentality from obviously the way Linfield are.
Yeah, like you look back in life and you don't look back with regrets, do you? You kind of look to see what you took and learned from the different things that you said. You mentioned about Ballymena not getting the chance to go across the water, but then you may not have be doing what you're doing now if you had a goal. You can't look back, can you? Is that kind of the way to look at it?
Yeah, you have to take the positives from everything. Take the positives from the time at Ballymena, my time at Linfield, and obviously now my time at Coleraine. It's going great for me, so I can only be happy with how my career's went so far.
What's David Healy like? Obviously, we see him from afar. I begrudge having to like a Linfield manager, but I actually do like David Healy. It's one of the things, you know. What's he like? Is he just says it how he is and sees it how, you know, how would you describe him as a manager?
I thought he was great. Obviously, for a young player that wasn't really in the team that much, I think he was really helpful for me. He would have paid me as much attention as he did to Waterworth or Shane Lavery at the time. There was a lot of striker-specific drills, which were very, very good in training. And he would have been honest with you and just sort of told you if you were close or if you were far away to the team. And I like that honesty. So, yeah, I can no bad words to say about him.
And when Oran came in, was it an easy decision for you, or coming from Ballymena, was there an added thought about maybe not going, or how did you sum that one up?
No, when Oran came, I was actually looking to leave Linfield in the January. I was obviously into my second season at the club and wasn't playing that much. And I thought I deserved to be playing. So I wanted to go out and play a game. A permanent move to Coleraine came about. And met Owen, and I just jumped at the opportunity. I couldn't wait to sign.
And what was your impressions of Owen and what he was saying about Coleraine when he spoke to you there?
Well, obviously, like, Owen has a great reputation in the league, and anything you'd heard about him beforehand when I was at Linfield was only positive, and that he was great. So going into the meeting with him with that, like, expectation of what he was going to be like, he lived up to it, and I just couldn't wait to sign.
Decent signing, Johnny.
I will. The numbers would say that too. So I can't even give a jibe in here, unfortunately. So no, I think, you know, Chevy's made a good point. He had to go and play football, and he's been second to Zorn. That's Zorn's always favourite phrase when he plays players, he's second to him, he says. So yeah, he's been obviously second with a lot of football, but a lot of goals as well. So yeah, just a pity how the first half of the season's probably just one for everyone, I suppose, not just Matthew, I think for the whole team and the whole club. So fingers crossed that we can have a good, strong end of the season and maybe play in Europe. And I know Matthew scored in Europe for Coleraine as well, and I was thinking maybe in this first full season. So, yeah, it'd be nice if we can get back to that and get the jackpot and everyone else be good with
it. Yeah, I mean, I was looking at the figures earlier. I think it's nearly a goal every two game, Matthew, for your spell at Coleraine. So for a striker, I guess that's kind of what you're looking for, isn't it? A goal every two games. If you're in and around that, you're doing quite well.
Yeah, well, you could be better. You could be a goal again.
I knew you were going to say that.
No, I'm happy with my return so far, and hopefully I can just keep adding to it.
And Johnny mentioned something there about it. We all know it's been an up and down season for everybody at the club. But there's a big opportunity there to finish the season really, really well. Six games unbeaten at the moment. I think there's four of the regular games left, I think. And then into the playoffs. There's a very, very real chance, Matthew, that Coleraine could end what has been a pretty wretched season by qualifying for Europe. I mean, is that something that's in the players' minds at this moment in time? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, of course. Like, that's our goal at the start of the season, to try and qualify for Europe, or else then, hey, what are you playing for? The last two seasons, we've sort of went about it the opposite way. We've started the season well and been a bit more consistent, and near the end of the season, we've sort of fell away, and our European playoff performances were nowhere near good enough. So hopefully this season we can right the wrongs of the start of the season by finishing the season really well, keep up our unbeaten run into the post-flip fixtures, and really give the playoffs a good crack. And when you look at our games that we've six unbeaten there, like, four of them are against the top six. So we're performing well against the bigger sides. So hopefully we can just take that into the playoffs.
Yeah. And you know, with the players that are back, the defence all of a sudden has got that solid look about it again. And then with you and Jamie up front, you know, there's goals there with the likes of Jamie Glax and Connor chipping in from behind. You know, there's every reason to be positive, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. And Oren likes to refer to, like, playing the Coleraine way at times. And I think the last six games proves that going back to that sometimes can help us. We've proved to be hard to beat and a bit more dogged, and it's obviously stood us in good stead.
I mean, Johnny, a wee European trip would be nice after this year, wouldn't it?
It would be absolutely lovely going to somewhere like in Kosovo or Romania or somewhere, just absolute back end of nowhere. But no, the financial rewards of that would be brilliant, and especially where the club wants to go and the plans next year and stuff like that, would be a nice sort of tonic leading into that. So I know the work started with that, with London getting a new deal there, and obviously Dean Shields and that coming in. So I think if Europe after the season we've had would be some achievement. It would say a lot about the group if they really did achieve
it. I think it would. I mean, Chevy, the season's nearly over. Like, I know Johnny's looking ahead and stuff as well. We've had other people on the the podcast, and we always sort of talk about the new takeover and the ownership and how does that trickle down to the playing side of things or whatever. I mean, as players and from your point of view, does it make much of a difference, new ownership or talk about next season full time, or does that come into your thinking, or do you just keep going what you're doing and keep focused?
In my opinion, well, whether we like it or not, like all the things going on in the background all season, whether we wanted them to be a distraction or not, they probably have been. And having the weight off the club's shoulders of the takeover's complete, like the night we beat Linfield is when it was announced. I don't know whether there's any theory in that, but we'll say there is.
A happy coincidence.
It's great for the club that they're taking the next step and going full time. If they're wanting to keep up with the other clubs in the league and proving that Corian can compete and challenge for league titles, then it's definitely the step that they need to take. And it's definitely an exciting opportunity for the club.
I mean, it is. But I suppose it's like anything in life. Nothing stands still. And as a club, personnel-wise, everything has to keep moving forward, doesn't it? You can't afford to stand still. I mean, as a player, when you're in that league and there's 12 teams in the league, some are full-time, some are still part-time, do you notice a difference as a player when you come up against some of the full-time teams? Like Larne, I suppose, is the prime example. We all know they train every day and they look physically strong. Is there a difference when it steps out onto the field?
Not sure whether you notice a difference in playing a full-time team or a part-time team, but you definitely notice a difference in playing a top six side and a bottom six side. If, for example, Cliftonville's not full-time and they are as fit and as strong as anybody. So playing Cliftonville or playing Larne, like, feels the same, whereas, no disrespect to Newry or Ballina, like, it doesn't feel like you're playing a bigger club there, but it can still be a tricky, challenging game.
I suppose that just comes down to the training and the quality of players within the squad as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Like, the frustrating thing for us this season has been, if you write our strongest team down on paper, you would think it's challenging for league title. Like, it's a very strong 11, strong squad, as you like, and we've definitely underachieved today in this season. And as I say, we can just put the season right at the end of the season with the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny, you said a wee minute ago about Lyndon Kane and his new three-year deal. Is that, do you think, a sign of what the club is about going forward? Because obviously you always hear the stories about other clubs being interested in Lyndon, for example. Is that like a statement of intent from Corian just to sort of sign up one of their players long term, and it does it give you an idea of what way they're going to go in the future?
Hard to know, Stephen, of intent, but I would say it's just a sort of, it is probably a sign of the future that we've just nailed down one of our better players, so to speak, and one of our key players. So, yeah, Dave Lyndon now for the next 3 years is brilliant. He was coming out of contract, and I'm sure he would have had a bit of interest. So, yeah, it's just a great sign that he obviously sees the future at Corian. And to be fair, he's 27, I think Lyndon is, so yeah, they call him probably into his prime years as well. So, it's good that it's with us. And yeah, it was a nice boost, obviously, for the end of the week. And yeah, I think Oran's got a big, obviously, decision to make with the whole squad and things like that. So, yeah, the next 3-4 months is going to be absolute mental and carnage. And they see who stays and who goes and who can be full-time and who can't be full-time and things like that. So, yeah, time will tell for all that.
But like as Chevy said there, you know, there's no difference really between the likes of a Cliftonville and Larne, despite all the talk about Larne being the full-time team. And we've seen it ourselves. We've watched Larne and Cliftonville, and there's very little difference. So does that give you an argument that there could be a hybrid model at the Corian Showgrounds where some players who can't commit to full-time do that, and some who can't are still there and continue as a part-time?
I think it would be foolish to let players go who can't be full-time as well. So to be honest with you, Damien, who knows?
Mm.
Probably only two or three people at the football club knows what's happening next year, and you know, and that's just it. And I'm sure there's plenty of things to discuss, and I'm sure there's budgets and stuff need to be set, and all these conversations need to be had with certain guys, and there's certain guys in good jobs already, and certain guys who maybe not in good jobs that can't go full time, and things like that. So yeah, that's just down for Oran and everyone involved behind the scenes to sort out, and yeah, it's just gonna be a very interesting next few months.
Because I know, like, Chevy away from the football, you've got a very successful career going as well. Engineering, am I right in thinking construction engineering, like that sort of line? Yeah. But you're doing very well.
Yeah, I'm a construction engineer. Obviously went to university for it, so I worked hard to get where I'm at in it, and yeah, it's enjoyable.
And you were, excuse me, working on a big job down around Portrush there recently.
Yeah, I've been on the Portrush Dunluce Lodge hotel job for the best part of a year now, and it'll definitely add something to the North Coast.
No way you've that many brains, Chevy.
You underestimate me, Johnny.
You're right. Just on the Dunluce Lodge, I mean, will it be a seriously impressive place when it's finished?
Yes, to be a 5-star luxury golf resort hotel overlooking the fourth fairway in Royal Portrush, so it'll definitely be something for the North Coast.
Very nice, Johnny. That's the sort of place you and I can hang about in.
I've retired from golf, Damien, to be honest. I think Chevy's seen a few of my golf swings when you're certain, so he could probably understand why. So I think Chevy's actually decent at the golf.
How about that?
You and Deansy always seem to play, and Big Mitch, I know them two are right and handy at it, aren't they? So
they're much better than me.
So that you could be now be the best player at the football, or the best golfer at the football club. Because I know Trevor was good at it, and Big G and James would have played as well. So it seems to be, if you're good at golf, you're not no longer here.
I forgot about that. Yes, I think Jimmy fancies himself as a golfer.
He's at the Masters there. He's in the Masters tomorrow.
He is. But listen, it's going to be an interesting future, whatever happens short term, mid term, and long term as well. And just when we're talking about that, I think Johnny, you did catch up with Gary Scott this week. In terms of the Korean ladies, I mean, there's a lot of exciting developments happening and they are taking place. So you caught up with him this week. So let's just hear from Gary what he had to say.
Gareth, many thanks for joining us. How are you? How's things and how's things going?
Hey, things couldn't be better. Jonathan, thanks very much for inviting me on here to wax lyrical about the great progress we're making on the ladies and female side of the game within our great club. It couldn't have been going much better, to be quite honest. We have been working pretty diligently now. We've been working for a while now on the girls' side of the game, where we've got an exceptional group of volunteers, coaches, who are working really, really hard with our kids from under 7 all the way up to under 16. And my job's very, very easy. It's just making sure that they have everything they need to get a chance to deliver this great game to the kids and find appropriate pathways. Very much about the development and participation stage at this point in time, and find their love of the game and the ability. And the coaching crew that I've inherited, as I say, guys like Jersey Small, Big James Mahond, Colin Verry, Graham Beat, Janice McGarry, who's been there for a while, Pavel Sukareski, I hope I said that right, apologies if I haven't. Listen, they've done an incredible job, and one of the things that we've done is that a lot of our under 16 girls are actually supporting with the younger groups as well, so this helps with Duke Edinburgh stuff, and they have been a godsend. So they're nearly at the stage now where they can actually do the whole thing themselves. They wouldn't need folks like myself playing her part, you know what I mean? So as I say, it's good stuff. It's a growing club. We're improving the capacity of the people involved, and that's what it's all about, you know.
And this is your first pre-season really involved with the women's?
With the women's team, as I say, we've been going, obviously, we've started everything from ground zero. A lot of good work's been done in the past, but we've refreshed it. We're doing everything. It's a new regime, new plan. Pre-season has started probably in the dark with Emma Campbell, our strength and conditioning, and she's excellence only, who's based out at Gore in just outside the town there. And we've been doing a wee bit, we've got to work with her pre-Christmas. It's gone on for a long time now. Again, we're very much at the participation stage. As we're getting bodies through the door, we've got about 30 players now at the moment signed. In terms of experience, there's maybe not an awful lot right through the group. But it's very, very important. It's my obligation to make sure that we're sowing the seeds. Certainly, this season's all about development. This season's all about just getting the club up and running, getting ourselves credible. Admittedly, we're probably in a division too high for the skill set of a lot of the players who are new to the game. But hey, do you want to tell you that's my job and the coaching team's job to put them in a position to be competitive? The application of the group and the players has been absolutely excellent. The enthusiasm has matched and probably topped the application. And you know what I tell you, we're trying to put ourselves in a situation, you get the attitude right, you get your application right. See, we're getting a bit of self-belief and a wee bit of can-do mindset because there's absolutely nothing this group can't put their mind to. The coaching team and myself are absolutely driven and giving everybody a wee shot. You know, in the friendly games that we've played to date, we have actually used about 30 players. Everybody's got a sniff. And in terms of the quality and the continuity, I understand that compromises that a bit. But my obligation first is to get people involved in the badge, invested in the badge, and we're trying to find our identity. Who's the players that's maybe ready to roll now? Who's the players that's not? Who's the players that might surprise themselves? And you know, from the players' point of view, it's that belief in themselves, getting their mindset that they can compete. And from what I've seen so far, they absolutely can compete. And listen, but it's important as well, we're conducting ourselves right, building the culture of the club. I know these are the kind of words that are bandied about loosely, but it actually means something to Corey and it means something to Corey and woman. We're in a situation where we're getting a culture, we've got the right people around us, we're trying to do the right things, trying to put ourselves in a position where we can be successful. For many, many years from the outside, unfortunately, I think there's been a perception that the Cornish Mullen setup has been something you can poke fun up, well, fun at, you know. That isn't going to be this group. That isn't this group. That isn't the application of this group. And that isn't the mindset of this group. We'll always have a few setbacks. Any team I've ever been involved with has had setbacks, but you get success from setbacks. You can always learn something from any setback you have. A setback might be a misplaced pass. Setback might be you don't want a game in so many months. I plan to win every situation, every game we play. We want to be competitive, give ourselves that chance. And that's the expectation of the coaches. A certain expectation of me. It has been in any team I've ever been involved with. And I see this very much as the most fantastic opportunity of my career. And I've been very, very lucky and blessed. I've been exposed to an awful lot of good opportunities. And this here to me is right up there because we're at ground zero. We're ready to build. We're going to surprise an awful lot of people. And in all fairness, we're going to start with ourselves because we're our own judge. And we want to give the club something to be proud of. And we'll do that. For me, it's not about capturing headlines. It's about putting the best processes in place to capture the best experience, the best coaches and talent on and off the pitch to complement this wonderful, wonderful club we have. So from under 7 all the way to under 15 and now with the women's, we're going to add an awful lot to what Cornish Football Club is moving forward.
There's always this term, holistic player pathway. Sounds very complex, but can you sort of narrow it down for me and tell me what the plans are?
Yeah, well, in all fairness, I love a soundbite. And again, that sounds like something I would have said, holistic player pathway, but it's actually true, you know. I mean, it's actually trying to find, you know, there's a lot of things involved with being, when you pull a jersey, you join any club, any team, any environment. Okay, you're actually representing the people that have actually put you there. And that could be parents, family, guardians, school teachers, youth club leaders, different people, teachers who have invested an awful lot in you over a period of time. So you're actually representing them and showing, listen, this is who we have produced. And in all fairness, it doesn't really matter how good you are or how bad you are. All that really matters is how good you're trying to be. And I've always been a great believer in people with a positive mindset, apply themselves 100%, be coachable, try to learn from what you have around you. Again, the club's responsibility and my responsibility is to make sure the coaches have got the skill set and the support to actually develop themselves so they can provide a better experience for the players. But you see, if you throw 100% into what you love and what you do, I fully believe you, once you find your level, whatever your level may be, you will excel at your level. So, for example, what I mean by that is if I take myself, who my own illustrious playing career, I was a damn bad Korean League player at best. So, if it had been just down to that there, well, my football wouldn't have went very far. But I was able to offer something on a coaching pitch. And probably very, very, very early in my career, I could either play in a team that wouldn't win, or be involved in coaching teams that might have a chance to, might be a chance to compete and do different things. And I've got an awful lot of pleasure out of that, and I'm glad to say I've been able to contribute to an awful lot of clubs in a positive way for most players for a long, long time. And I'm just trying to bring that here now. So that was my holistic experience. I found something that I was able to work at, and I worked very, very hard at it. And you will tell you, I got to the top of my bounce, and I see this very much as coming close to the top of my bounce now, certainly in terms of club I've been involved with, to be quite honest. But I've always been a great believer as well. There are people at the club who will have a chance of developing on, possibly playing in NIWFA in the league, maybe in the NIFL league if the club can progress in the way we want it to over the next few years, and where my vision would be for the next few years. The few players involved that. Few will play maybe higher level, maybe play international, maybe play across in England. That could happen. Do you know, I'm going to tell you what? A few of them might decide they'll go down the admin route or down the coaching route. And it's all about trying to find your niche and contribute heavily in your niche, because it's not all about the players. It's the people behind the scenes actually do just as important a job to get the players on a pitch for a Wednesday night in our case, or Saturday afternoon or wherever. And everybody can do that. I read once that everybody, if you are really enthusiastic about a subject and you spend 20 minutes reading on it every single night diligently, see within 5 years, you will be a national expert on that subject. So I think we've a lot of people that have got the diligence, have got the application, have got the attitude. So I think we're going to have a lot of experts around the place before it's all over. And I can assure you, I'm not an expert in anything other than enthusiasm, other than putting a plan together and trying to give a good experience to people. So hopefully we can get other people doing the same thing. Take the pressure off myself. There's a Harvard psychologist whose name I can't remember, just a minute, Dave Howard possibly, who talks about the history of illusion. That people believe in occasion that you see, because they are the way they are today, they'll always be like that. Well, that's really not the case. You choose your own path. You write your own story. You can be anything. As a Liverpool fan for many, many years, as many Manchester United fans, shall we say now, will know, from the days of Manchester United won everything. That hasn't happened for a while. And there's probably not an awful lot of things have changed at their club in terms of the approach to the application. But, this history of illusion is be people can get into a false sense of security that what you are now is what you will always be. With Korean woman, I'll tell you what, we're going to be a very, very good side. It's going to take a while to get there, but all the elements are there in terms of the coaching crew, in terms of the enthusiasm of the players, in terms of the recruitment model moving forward, whereby if you're a good person and you want to develop and you want to get the most out of your football experience, Korean woman is going to be a very, very viable option. There's lots of good options, and you respect all the other good options are about. I don't feel a lot of the options about locally have give us the due respect over the years. So we have to earn that, and we'll do that.
And final question for me. Obviously, you mentioned that you're in ground zero or the start of on the journey. If we're having a chat in April 2029, what would you have liked to have? What would you like to have, accomplished, or what do you think is realistic in that time frame?
Hopefully, as I say, my hair will still be grey, and it'll still be there. So that'll be the most important thing. If I can get that going, we'll not be too bad. What I would say now is even the highest tide can turn. So even though things maybe haven't went so well for us for a number of years, even the highest tide can turn. So we're really at the start of that process now. And again, you see, if we can, the ultimate fulfillment is getting a group of people knowing that they've given absolutely everything that they can to achieve the best that they can as a club and as a group. I think that's the ultimate achievement. And I feel our players in our group will receive that off an awful lot. Certainly in the short term, they'll find out because already the club culture and respect for each other is there. For me, I think there's a clarity of message in terms of clarity of expectation when you come to the club. especially at the top end, where we're going for moving away from a developmental team, which is probably where we are at the moment, with a smattering of some really good experienced players. Two, we've got a lot of really good experienced players, and we're a competitive side, and take the opportunity to climb the leagues. But again, you do that one step at a time, and you actually do that one game at a time. And you do that by developing the players that you have, recruiting people that make you better, that are just as bought into trying to make the group as good as it possibly can be. And you see, if we do that one step at a time, that's one game at a time, one play at a time. I'd be honest with you to say, I think very, very good things are going to happen very, very quickly. And we will do that. I think I talked earlier on there about 5 years. If you apply yourself at something, you get to a level as national expert. Again, I repeat, I don't know whether there'll be many experts about, but I'll tell you what, they'll be a very, very competitive football team. And I'll be proud to say that I was part of contributing to getting the ball rolling yet again. Our ship will come in. And there's a lot of players who've been there for a long time, including like Sheree McVeigh, who is an absolutely top-class professional in every way, shape, or form. Our ship will come in, and she'll be a big, big part of making that happen.
Well, Gareth, I know your season gets underway on the 24th, home day Ballymena. Nice derby match they start off. So, wishes to the women's team and all the other underage groups the very best of luck moving forward.
Thank you very, very much, as I say. And listen, anybody that wants to come down, our first game's at the Showgrounds on the 24th. We're ready to roll. Every bit of support, every bit of legitimate, genuine support, will sincerely be appreciated. And these women have worked very, very hard. So if anybody wants to come down and add any wee bit to the mix, because everyone's vital, and that wee shout, that wee bit of encouragement, it's important to everyone. And I know the girls certainly have deserved it. So let's get it going.
Yep, Johnny, you were speaking to Gary. Exciting times. Well, ladies football, as we all know, getting bigger and stronger all the time. Republic of Ireland game on live on ITV last night, of course. Going good guns. So yeah, it's another string to Corian's bow, Johnny, isn't it? The ladies side of things.
Yeah, obviously I know Gareth is very passionate about it, and I think if his passion can come across and things can go well, it's going to take a bit of time, I think, as well. I think it needs to be a bit of realization or a bit of realism there too. It's just going to take a few years to get that on board, and obviously women's football is obviously growing, and so as we always say all the time, Corian is strategically in a very good area. There's plenty of wee girls or young girls playing football, so I think Ballymoney of they're really, really good as well at that age, or with women's football, there's Raisview as well. There's a lot of good teams. So yeah, it's just gonna take time to kick on. And but I think Gareth's enthusiasm, there's no better man to try and get those plans into fruition.
Yeah, and a big shout out to Corian's Lauren Wade, who scored for Northern Ireland there, I think, during the week as well. Obviously, Hugh Wade's granddaughter, so she a keen Corian supporter as well. Looking ahead just to this weekend, guys. Glen's at home, Chevy. Hard to know with the Glens sometimes, isn't it? What you're going to get?
Yeah, well, we've got two home games in the next 2 Saturdays. Obviously, the Limfield game in between, away to Windsor, or away at Windsor. The Glens, it's hard to know what you're going to get this season. They obviously have a very strong quality squad, but we'll just be looking after ourselves this week and looking to keep our momentum going and putting in all our performance.
Get another goal, perhaps. I
Yep, that's the aim.
mean, Johnny, Glentoran really are difficult to sort of pin down, aren't they? You're just really not quite sure what kind of a side you're going to get.
I hit the nail on the head, a bit like United, I suppose. You don't really know what you're going to get either. So, be interesting to see if Reece Marshall's involved, things like that. I'm surprised that got out so quick. Apparently, there's five others who have maybe agreed pre-contract moves elsewhere. So. I don't know whether they're gonna have enough sort of jump the gun that I don't know the insides and outsides of anything to do with that. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see if he's but listen, Glen's of players that can hurt you and stuff like that. So again, just Corian, try and keep the unbeaten going, get a bit of form going, get partnerships and stuff going as well. So no, fingers crossed we can get another positive result.
Yeah, and from a footballer's point of view, Chevy, these are the kind of games that you want to be involved in. As you say, you've got Glens at home, away to Linfield, and then away to Linfield, and then finish the season away to Larne on a day, who knows how what things will happen, but on a day that they could be vying for the league title on the last day of the season, and you could be involved. Unfortunately, it's not Corrine that are going for the league, but at least you'll have a say maybe in the destination of the league title, which is good.
Yeah, definitely. As you say, unfortunately, it's not us going for the league, but some people say these split games, they can be a bit pointless or meaningless, but you can't look at it that way whatsoever. And footballers themselves, they don't let themselves think that way or play that way. Like, at the end of the day, we're playing for playoff spots or a team in the playoff game. Like, we have plenty to play for this season, and just need to keep the momentum going.
I mean, it would be worse if, like, with previously, if without the split and you weren't going for the European things, these games would be dead rubbers. If you didn't have that top six, bottom six split, I remember the time when the league didn't have that top six and bottom six split, and there were games that were just not pointless, but nothing to play for. And at least now, every team, either in the top half and even at the bottom end of the table, Matthew, all the teams have something realistic to play for.
Yeah, definitely. Like, at the end of the day, once we finish our post-split fixtures, we're two games from Europe. Like, if you look at it the way of the Irish Cup, if you play a semi-final and a final, you're in Europe. So there's no better opportunity to get into Europe.
Any idea, Johnny, how that would go? I suppose it depends on how the teams finish, but you know these things better than I do. I mean, any ideas at this stage?
Yeah, well, we just don't know who's going to finish fourth and seventh, but then two will play each other, and then more than likely we're going to be away. For the first semi final ever finishes fifth, so either Glens or the Crews, and then winners of the other semi final. And if seventh wins, we're at home. If the team fourth wins, we're away. So, plenty to play for, and it's just going to be interesting to see who finishes, obviously, in the different positions in the league.
Is there not something about some of the teams possibly finishing seventh that haven't applied for Europe? I think Glenavon and somebody else.
Yeah, there's rumours that Glenavon and
Loughall
don't have the European licence. I haven't seen anything confirmed yet. So, again, who knows, so to speak. But at the end of the day, for Corrine, who really sort of cares, I suppose, we just have to look after ourselves and keep things ticking on.
And just, you know, just about finishing strongly. We've said it already in the podcast, Chevy, but just finish strongly, take that end of the last two and hopefully bag a European place.
Yeah, definitely. We have a lot of players in the squad at the moment, and then the starting 11 that by this stage of the season are usually on 35, 40 games, but some of us are only on 20, 25, and have a freshness about us. Hopefully we can keep that going into the next remaining games and finish strong.
It's like coming into the midpoint of the season, really, instead of the latter part of the season for most of you guys, or a lot of you guys.
Yeah, Owen said on Saturday, there's a number of players that it's nearly like October for us. You'd have 15, 20 games by October, November usually, so It's a good thing that we're coming into this part of the season with a bit of freshness about us.
That could be the most important thing of the whole lot, Johnny, couldn't it?
Yeah, and boys eager to make up for lost time as well. So, hopefully we've just hit form at the right time for the rest of the season.
Chevy, just banging your time here, a lot of goals and stuff. Any particular favourites or any goals that stands out particularly for you?
Yeah, I have a few. Obviously, playing for Corrine, you want to score on Boxing Day. So my best sort of finish was against Ballymena on Boxing Day. We beat them 2-0. Then scoring in Europe.
What?
Shank?
No chance. Scoring in Europe as well was a big one for me. I'm proud of that.
Just when you score against Ballymena there, you're talking about, and you being a Ballymena lad and probably living around Ballymena, do you get a bit of slagging around town, around home when that happens?
When we're playing against them, the fans will give you a bit, especially the time I got sent off, like a dog's abuse walking off. But see around the town, no one will say a thing to you.
That's football fans in general, isn't it?
Yep, keyboard warriors.
They're all very quick to, when they're all in a big group. Like, but that must have been nice, given your links with Ballymena, because they're like all footballers talk about it. Like, if you leave a club or and you go back to play them, you want to do well against them, and there's nothing better than scoring. It was there's satisfaction there, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. There was satisfaction scoring against Ballymena, but it wasn't out of bitterness of me
No.
playing for them. It's the fact
No.
that they're our biggest rivals now that is the main factor that it's good to score against them. But it feels good to score against anyone, to be honest.
And what's it like, those games, those Boxing Day games? I mean, are they really particularly special to play in?
Yeah, I really enjoy the ones at the Korean Showgrounds. I think we had 4,500 there last year. Just it feels like a big day and a big event. So, yeah, they're definitely great games to play in.
Yeah. I mean, Johnny, let's hope they don't get relegated this year, or that'll be the end of that.
I don't want them to go down, to be honest. A lot of them, they sweat it out and go through a playoff and have sleepless nights and everyone else. And but now you genuinely, I think, witness Boxing Day and things like that. So, fingers crossed that they don't. Fingers crossed they don't go down, but they have nightmares.
Yeah, do you know what? We're sitting here, and fair's fair in football and all, and we're taking the mickey a little bit out of Ballymena, but they've actually beaten us twice this year.
I know
Were.
them 6 points, would actually have them bottom. Nuri would be above them, I think.
Well, David, it would help if our strikers stay on the pitch, you know what I mean?
Never a red card.
I'm trying to remember. Wait, which one was that? I'm trying to think. My memory's bad.
Oh,
Sean.
apparently I kicked Sean O'Neill in the face.
Oh, that one. That wasn't a red card.
No, no chance.
Sorry, I forgot about that. Yeah, I wasn't. Who was the referee that day? I can't remember.
Lee Tavender, and off we go.
Ah, yes, that explains it then. Yeah, that does explain it. And the goal in Europe, who would tell us who was that against?
That was against Velez Mostar. It was also a good experience playing out there. Their fans were crazy.
Were you at that one too, Johnny? Yeah.
The boss going in and their fans just staring at you walking in, and the players warming up. Do you remember warming up about an hour before the match, and the fans all were in giving his grief? That was.
Yeah, we got like a police escort in, and then all the fans were there an hour before the pit or an hour before the game with their tops off, swinging their tops in the air.
What's that like? Is that intimidatory? Is that intimidatory to you guys, or do you just look upon that as just like an incentive to go out and do well?
I think other sort of professional clubs, if they were playing against that, would maybe find it intimidating, but I think our guys just looked at it and thought, "This is class." Like, we're obviously not used to this back home, so let's relish it. And we actually put on a good disciplined performance. We won 1-0 up, and then we lost the game 2-1 with 2 penalties. Lyndon thought he'd save one on the line.
I think I remember that. I remember that game. I remember watching
It
that
would have
game.
been a goal anyway if he hadn't saved it.
I remember that as well. And how different is it playing in Europe? I know that's a stupid question, or it's an obvious, a stupid question, but I mean, just how different is it? I mean, it's just different cultures, food, everything, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a completely different experience. Like, you're going away to a foreign country. It's really, really warm. It's 35 degrees when we were playing. And it's a whole different way of playing in a game. Like, I don't think we've ever had such a deep defensive block. I was playing on the edge of our D for most of the game. But no, it was definitely a high of it was a high in my time at Korean, and hopefully we can experience that again in the summer.
It's just, it is almost like a, not the pinnacle as such, but it is like it's an achievement, isn't it? I mean, Korean as a club have had a long and very storied history in Europe as well. But even back in the olden days, it was better because there was an open draw, and you know, you could have played like Korean did play Spurs one year in Europe as well. And it's just unfortunate for the current group of footballers that you don't get that opportunity.
Yeah, it'd be class if that was the case. Like, I'm sure you heard the stories of my uncle Wes. Like, he was one kick of a ball away from playing against AC Milan at the time, who were the best side in the world. And even the teams he played against, like Copenhagen and Dynamo Tbilisi and stuff like that, they're just real, real big European clubs playing in front of 60,000-70,000. Like that.
He did mention it, to be fair.
Yeah, like Crusaders got a real good few draws there in the last few years, playing Wolves and Copenhagen and Ludogorets, I think they played as well. Like, they played about a few big giants.
Remember, and Cliftonville got Celtic as well.
Yeah, Linfield even had a few big sides as well, like Ben Rosenberg and Carabag.
Mm-hmm. It is a shame. Like, I mean, I remember being at the Corian Tottenham Hotspur game in 1982 at the Showgrounds, and you could not have got another centre in that ground that day. It was absolutely the biggest crowd that was ever there. And that was a Spurs team that had won the FA Cup that season previously, which gives you an indication. But I mean, and that just very rarely happens now, Johnny. It's a bit of a shame, isn't it? But even so, getting Europe still good, still interesting.
Still good for the pocket and good experiences and stuff like that. So
yeah, not good for your pocket, mate.
No, but sure, these things happen, and yeah, it's just a pity we'll never play them sort of teams again unless we're very, very lucky. So.
On the other hand, it is good though that you're playing against teams that are sort of more your level, because you have more of a chance of progressing on to the next stage, and that's maybe where you will meet a bigger side.
That's true. It's true. And Irish League clubs have been very close. I mean, Linfield famously a couple of years ago were within seconds. Remember, like, they scored, and then whoever they were playing went up the field, and then who was it scored the own goal? Was it Jimmy Callagher?
Yeah, they had a one-on-one at the other end of the pitch.
That's right.
When the other team went down and scored, and then they lost in penalties.
That's right. Well, that was, and like, they were, that was to go into the group stage, I think, was it?
Yeah, that would have been the group stage of the Europa Conference, I think.
Yeah, flip me. That was a hard one for them, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It was actually a hard one for the whole league. I'm sure the whole league was rooting for them to try and get into European competition.
And it took them a little bit of time to recover from that, Linfield, didn't it? Because I think at the start of that next season, they just really struggled just to get over the hangover of that European defeat, I think, from memory.
Yeah, it probably did affect them going into the season. Probably demoralising, thinking you're about to be playing in European competition group stages, and then all of a sudden, just a second later, it's gone. So I'm sure it did affect them.
Can't take nothing for granted, Johnny.
No, that's it. I remember watching it and couldn't believe what I was seeing, and just the highs and lows of football, and just literally he hits that over the bar instead of into the net, and they're in Europe. So just madder game of football that there was, and you couldn't help but feel a bit sorry for them. But sure, these things happen.
They do indeed. Well, here, guys, it's been a great old conversation. Just like we said at the start, we just hope you keep this unbeaten run going as long as possible, get into the playoffs, Chevy, and as you say, two games, two wins, and you're into Europe, which that's ultimately what the season's about, isn't it? Get that in that European spot.
Yeah, definitely. Like, at the end of the day, no matter how we get there, if we end up the season getting Europe, we've met one of our targets. Although finishing sixth wasn't our target, we could still end up getting the main target of Europe.
I know, but there has been mitigating factors, hasn't there? I mean, we've talked about it before on the podcast. We talked about it again tonight. You miss the spine of your team for a large chunk of your season. I don't care what team you are going to struggle for results, aren't you?
Yeah, the team's been riddled with injuries this season. Like, it's been no secret. We've been hard done by not being able to get any momentum going with what you would call our strongest sort of team or players. But we're back now, playing well, and hopefully, as you say, we can finish the season strong, try and get a European spot.
What about just off the field as well? Junior Mendes has come in, and now more recently, Dean has come in as well. new voices on the touch side, and new voices in coaching and training. Does that have an impact?
Yeah, Junior Mendes, he's been in for a good few weeks now, and honestly, he's been absolutely top class since he's come in. He just has a real sense of professionalism about him. He makes you accountable for what you're doing. He's helping us do different things on and off the pitch, and he's just a real good guy. He's definitely helped improve things, and always mm-hmm. the appointment of Dean Shields can only help improve things as well. The quality of training the last few years has taken another step up, and that'll only benefit the club.
Well, that's it. I mean, both guys come with, they've played and competed at a high level, junior and then Scotland, Dean in Scotland for some big clubs, Northern Ireland International. So if you could draw on some of that experience, it stands to the reason that you hope it sort of filters its way down to the players, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You can only have respect for his career and take every word he says as gospel, and trust that what he's telling you is what you should do. So, yeah, he's definitely a great coach, and he's only going to help the club moving forward.
Yeah, good to see what happens now. So, well, here, listen, Matthew, thank you very much for your time. I know you're a busy guy. Johnny, thank you for taking time out of your eating your dinner to spend time with us here.
No worries.
I hope your legs have recovered from Paris. Are you at Corey on Saturday, Johnny?
I actually am.
You are.
I think I've missed, was it 4 Corey matches this year, and I think we've got a result in every single one of them. So you probably just play more often.
That does remind me. There was a wee video from Warren one of the games, wasn't there?
I told me to stay away. I think I came back the next week and we got beat. So I may hide.
Are you back to Paris?
I may hide.
Yeah, you're right. You go back to Paris and stay there, big man. Well, here, guys, thank you very much for your time. Thank you to everyone who continues to listen to the podcast. Much appreciated. Next week, we hope to have a very special podcast. 50 years since Corian's one and only league title triumph back in 1974. We may be doing something on that, so watch this space. I mean, Chevy, hard to believe, 50 years since Corian won the league for the one and only time.
That's crazy. Hard to believe that a club the size of Corian hasn't won it for 50 years.
It is. It's mad, isn't it?
Mad.
Listen, well, hopefully that'll be put right sometime in the near future. So until next week, thank you to Matthew Shavlin. Thank you to Jonathan McNabb. Thank you to our listeners. And of course, thank you to the Lodge Hotel for kindly sponsoring the podcast as ever. So good luck to the guys on Saturday against Glentoran and for the rest of the season to Matthew. And until next weekend, come on the Bandsiders.